We're on.
Hi.
Snow tomorrow.
I'm going to do several things today, since we need to. There are two concepts that we have not talked very much about. I mentioned one of them last week, but I want to expand on the notion of the exosystem. I want to talk briefly about the macro system, very briefly, and then we'll take whatever questions you have. I have an exercise or two that we can do as a group to get you in the frame of mind that I hope you will enter the eco-exam experience with. Enter with a frame of mind, yes. And then we'll talk briefly about exercise 3, which we will give back at the end of class. And then we will talk about exercise 4, which is due a week from today. Anything else? That's it. Okay, good. Exosystem. I mentioned this the other day, and we've talked about it a couple of times in distinguishing settings in which the developing person participates and settings in which the developing person does not participate, but where there may be some connection, some indirect link to settings in the developing person's mesosystem. Okay? So exo, from foreign or outside. Exosystem refers to those settings that are not settings that the developing person normally participates in, but in which things happen that might affect the developing child, the developing person, or where things might be affected by the developing person. Okay? So these are the settings that are important in your development, but in which you don't participate. And we had talked about those briefly, but I just want to make sure that we are on the same page with them. Technically, they're simply settings that do not involve the developing person as an active participant, but in which events occur that affect or are affected by what happens in a mesosystem setting, one that does contain the developing person. Okay, so these are the settings where, as I think the examples we used the other day, the settings where your parents work. If you don't go there as a regular participant, then things still may happen there that affect you. The school board, the UVM trustees, if you don't go to the meetings, they're not part of your mesosystem, but they may be in your exosystem because things happen there that affect your development. Okay. Places where people talk about you. Your parents' therapist's office. Maybe a very important exosystem setting for you, even though you don't go there. We recommend family therapy, but if they don't want you to participate or you can't, or they're in couples counseling without you, then it's not a mesosystem setting for you, it's an exosystem setting, because hopefully what happens there will affect you because your parents will do a better job of interacting with you. Okay? Or the things that you do may affect what happens there, because when you get in trouble, you affect what happens there because they end up talking about you instead of about their relationship. Okay? So you can probably think of many exosystem settings. I think it's a straightforward concept. Anybody confused so far? If not, I'll work on it. Rontgenbrenner, in talking about the exosystem, focuses on settings where decisions are made or where important things happen that affect a person, and he refers to those as power settings. Power settings. Places where power is exercised. When the trustees raise the tuition or eliminate a program, that's the exercise of power in a way that affects people. So it's considered a power setting. The legislature is a power setting. The corporate boardroom that decides to lay off 1,200 people, including your parent, is a place where power is exercised. And Bronfenbrenner is concerned about the fact that often decisions are made and power is exercised in ways that are not responsive or not facilitative of the needs, particularly of children or young people in our society. Young people are likely to have very little access to settings where decisions are made. And so he says that it's important that there be direct and indirect links to those power settings. So that you can influence the decisions that are made and the allocation of resources. Because children aren't likely to go into those power settings themselves, the direct links are not going to be the children, they're going to be people who are otherwise involved with the setting, for example, with the child, for example, parents. So parents can provide a direct link between the setting of home or school and the setting where decisions are being made. Indirect links are also important, so that you may not go into the legislature, but it might be helpful, even if you don't provide a direct link, that you talk to your legislator. I was at a dinner Sunday evening, and one of the stories that somebody was telling was of a particular problem that needed to be solved. And the person telling the story had simply called Senator Leahy's staff. Indirect. And Senator Leahy's staff took care of the problem in a matter of hours that wasn't being handled in the normal channels, but was something that his staff had direct influence over just by making a telephone call. So some of us can call Senator Leahy's staff and say, here's a problem, please, can you do something about it? Children are not likely to make that call. So they have advocates. And the notion of advocacy for a person or for a cause involves getting access to making indirect connections or direct links to the places where decisions are going to be made. So if decisions are going to be made that are going to influence you, they're more likely to be made in ways that will help you if there are close connections between the people who are going to make those decisions and their process and you. If they know what you need, if they have information that's valid about your situation, if they think about you, if they're aware that you exist, they may be able to take your well-being into account. And Bronfenbrenner was very concerned that much evil was done in power settings because people were unaware of the needs of children and families and they didn't take them into consideration. So he spent much of the latter few years of his life advocating for policies and processes that took into account the needs of children and families in our society. And generally, he says, the developmental potential of any setting is inversely proportionate to the number of intervening links in the network chain that connects that setting to settings of power. So if we want to think about making decisions that influence what happens, for example, in the classroom, they're more likely to be made in ways that will benefit your development if we have direct access to the people who are making those decisions. So if we need something, I go to my department chair. He knows me, he knows many of you. We talk about it. There's only one step between the department chair and here. He doesn't come in here, but there's only one step, and I provide a direct link between this setting and his office. And he wants to do well by you, so he'll provide what we need. If he can't, then he'll go to the dean. He has to explain it to her. She doesn't know what goes on in here. She has your best interests at heart, but she doesn't understand the situation in this class, in this program. As well, I'm using this as an example. I'm not trashing her. I'm saying that, you know, it's harder for her to understand. If she can't do anything about it, then it has to go to the provost. Oh, okay. Now we've got somebody who hasn't much connection at all, and we're three steps away from anybody who can do something here. He can't do it, he's got to go to the Board of Trustees. We're watering down the links, and we're making more intermediate links or more intervening links. Trustees can't do it, so they put it in their legislative request. So it goes to the legislature. Legislature can't do it without assistance from the federal. Okay, you got the point. The more steps you have to go through to get from where you want action to be taken to where the action has to reside, where the decisions are made, the more steps there are, the less likely the activities in that power setting are going to really take into account what you need and what you want. Now, it's important here that Bronfenbrenner kind of slipped up a bit. He made a little mistake in writing this hypothesis and threw in the term intermediate link. He's already used that term, and it makes it sound like here's the problem. It makes it sound like if we have two settings and have lots of links between them, that would be good, and that is good. Okay. But what he's talking about with power settings is how many links there are in the chain of information and decision making between the setting that you're interested in and the power setting. So here he's talking about links or steps, and I've changed the term to intervening. Now, how many are there between you and there? And the more there are, the less likely you are to get things done the way you want them. The less likely people in those settings are to understand what you need. Okay. What Bronfenbrenner said, I like very much. He said, one of the goals in life is to know your environment, your ecosystem, well enough to understand it, to have a valid view of how it works, so that you know where the decisions are made, you know where the power is exercised, and you have the skills to get there, to advocate for yourself, to make your needs known and your wishes known to people who are in power. And the best way to do that, he suggested, is to take out all those links and take that exosystem setting and make it a mesosystem setting. And how do you do that? By entering it. By entering it. By being able to go there and speaking for yourself so that your message is direct and it's clear and you have more likelihood of making direct influence in that setting, being a participant in it. And the way he said our goal, the way he said it, you have to listen carefully because it can be problematic. You have to say it carefully. I'm sorry. Where exo is, there shall meso be. You just have to be careful about the SOB syllables at the end. Where exo is, there shall meso be. You want to convert that exosystem setting to a mesosystem setting, and that requires that you understand where it is and how the power is exercised, and that you have the skills to get into it and the motivation to do that. So you don't passively sit back and say, okay, Board of Trustees, do whatever you want, you know, I'll just live with it. But you say, wait a minute, the Board of Trustees needs to hear my viewpoint on this, so I'm going to write him a letter, I'm going to go there, I'm going to attend the meeting, I'm going to ask to speak, and whatever it is that you need to do to make sure that they are aware of the implications of the decisions that they make. Okay? The last concept that I want to spend a few minutes on today, I'm not going to dwell on it, I just want to define it and get you started thinking about it, is the notion of the macro system. Macro, from the term meaning largest, big. And what Bronfenbrenner is attempting to do with the notion of macro system is to bring us to the level of culture or society. He's talked about settings. He's talked about roles, relationships, and activities. He's talked about settings that you participate in and settings that you don't participate in, and networks of those, the relations among them, the mesosystem. Ouch. Wasn't your watch. No, it wasn't. Okay. And he wants to take us to the next level of abstraction, which is to talk about an entire community or an entire culture or a society. And he wants to make it consistent with the way he's been describing the ecosystem. But the ecosystem exists at the level of society too. And how do you take that into account? For him, the solution to that was to talk about consistencies in the form and content in the microsystems or the meso and exosystems. If there is such a beast as a culture, then it exists in the similarities across settings. If the settings don't have any consistency, if every household is different, if every school is different, then you don't have a culture. Culture, he argues, exists to the extent that relationships and roles are consistent across settings. And we have beliefs about those consistencies. Why do the various settings operate in similar fashion? One of the reasons they do is that the way they operate reflects beliefs that we have about the way things ought to be. And a culture or society refers to the consistencies and similarities shared across people and across families and across households, across institutions in that particular group that think they are a society. Okay? So, how might microsystems be consistent within a culture? Can you describe the pattern that makes them similar? One of the difficulties with this concept is that many of us have never stepped outside our own culture. So it's very difficult for us to conceptualize that things might be different in another culture and to understand what those consistencies might be. If you've traveled in another country, then you know that things are done differently there. Usually wrong. No, that's a joke. You know that they're done differently and that people have different beliefs, and that's what makes it a different culture. Good.
When I went to Germany, I don't know if this is an example, but everyone drinks tonic water there, never regular water, and they thought it was odd that like I would ask for non-bubbly water. So yeah. I thought that was a good example of a consistency.
Yeah. Wonder why they drink bubbly water.
Sure.
Because they really prefer beer.
Yeah.
But they can't drink beer during the day.
That's
right. Or they'd all be drunk.
And they also drink
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one of the consistencies is the way food is prepared, what food is prepared, how it is served. In Germany, they eat bread for dinner. That's funny, and in my family, they do too. In fact, my brother-in-law insists that it's not a meal unless there is a plate of sliced bread on the table. And he'll literally stand at the table before he sits down, and if there's not bread there, it's not a dinner. It's not dinner. Yeah, those are consistencies. It's a nice example because it demonstrates some of the changes in our some subcultures in the United States. Beer used to be served by employers at lunchtime. It was just automatic. You know, you got beer during your break, but it leads to industrial accidents and alcoholism and all those sorts of things. So we kind of cut it out. It's also expensive if you don't have your own brewery on site. But in other cultures, that's typically done. Okay. Let me give you an example that should be fairly familiar. Most of you went to school, right? You've been to school a lot. And we were talking about the trajectory the other day. The trajectory of kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, junior high school, whatever you went through, and college has some consistencies across all of those settings. Students are typically divided into grades and typically by age. and grouped according to age. There are a few exceptions to those which are considered alternative, fringe, and a suspect, because we all believe that kids should be homogenized and that teaching is easier if you have all the same age, regardless of whether they're at the same level. It's a bizarre belief, and it's not valid, but we have it anyway. And we typically have kids in classrooms, and we typically have a teacher assigned to each classroom. And supervising the teachers is typically a principal. And supervising the principals in several different schools is typically a superintendent. And in a state, all of those superintendents will be supervised by a commissioner of education, a secretary of education, a state superintendent of instruction, some label that says this person is responsible for the district superintendents, or in some states, county superintendents. The superintendents are responsible for the principals, who are responsible for the buildings and all the teachers in the buildings, and there will be teachers in all of those buildings, and they will typically each have a classroom of children that they are primarily responsible for. In some schools, they won't be identified particularly, but you'll have a homeroom and a homeroom teacher. Is that familiar to all of you? Did any of you go through a school system that was quite different from that? Yeah. Not in the United States, probably. And that's shared mostly with Western Europe. And that's the way it is. And it's absurd. It doesn't work. It's a very inefficient, compromise, non-developmental way to teach. But we do it anyway because we all believe that that's the way it ought to be done. If you want to hear the arguments about why it's non-developmental and why it's a compromise, take 161 next fall and we'll go through that. We'll examine the consistencies and the beliefs that they're based on and whether or not they in fact are designed to promote development of students. And typically they're not. But that's the way it's done. And it's done that way for a lot of reasons, but one is to create consistency so that in a population that is fairly mobile, kids can go from Rhode Island to Oregon and encounter a similar environment with a similar curriculum. Everybody has social studies, right? Everybody has math, everybody has language arts. And the kids of the specific age that your child is at will probably be studying very similar concepts because they use the same textbooks. That consistency makes it easy to move back and forth from setting to setting. The expectations are similar. You should be hearing some echoes of a hypothesis in here. The activities and the roles and the relationships are going to be congruent from setting to setting so that it makes it easier to move from setting to setting. And that's important if you have a population in which whatever the percentage is, 30% of us, something like that, move every year. 15% of us change school districts every year, some absurd figure like that. If you're going to have that kind of mobility, you need to have the consistency. And that consistency in the way things are put together, the way they operate, is the macro system. That's what the macro system is. Let me give you a couple of definitions so that this is an odd concept, right? That culture exists in the consistency across settings. Familiar? Sociology, right?
What?
Sociology is very familiar. That's the way you define culture.
Yeah.
The consistency across settings. Right? But for most of us, it's a little odd because we've never thought about how you define society or culture. American Heritage College Dictionary. One definition: a group of human beings broadly distinguished from other groups by mutual interests. Okay. Similar views of the world. Participation in characteristic relationships. Characteristic relationships means that they are similar across settings. They characterize the society. They are typical. The relationships are going to be similar. Shared institutions. I just described the shared institution of the typical graded school. And a common culture. And I'm not sure what that means. Oh, well, let's find out what the culture means. Culture, by the same dictionary, is the totality of socially transmitted behavior patterns. Behavior patterns, that's activities that are typical, that means similar across different settings. Arts, beliefs, institutions are settings, and all of the products of human work and thought. Okay. So both in the definition of society and in the definition of culture, you have reference to the fact that there are typical patterns. There are similarities across microsystems. There are similarities in the ways institutions or settings relate to each other, the mesosystem. And there are beliefs that support the particular patterns that are consistent across the culture. Okay, I don't want to spend more time on that notion, except to suggest that we won't ask any more than its definition on the ECO exam. And I'll challenge you for next week, after the ECO exam, to come up with questions or examples of the operation of a macro system in your life. It would be fun. Okay. Let me go to a group exercise that will help us begin to get a handle, I hope, on the nature of the ECO exam. Okay. This is the sort of thing that's going to happen. Just one of them. The rest of it is very objective. But the goal in this unit is that you should be able to come out of this unit translating a brief sketch like this into developmental terms. Okay. And think about how the hypotheses might fit, how the definitions fit. So, the mother quit her job, took her two children out of daycare, and became a full-time stay-home mom. This is actually based on a newspaper article from a few years ago. After a couple of months, she arranged a play group that met one morning a week with children from three other families. The group rotated among the four homes, and the host parents took responsibility for planning and supervising the activities. Okay. Who are the developing people? The two children, and some of you want to argue that the mother is also developing. We'll allow that. Okay. We're all developing. Bronfenbrenner uses the term developing person, again, to focus on who it is we're going to be talking about. So, if we're going to talk about a mesosystem in a minute, we have to determine whether we're talking about the children's mesosystem or the mother's mesosystem or the host parent's mesosystem. Right? Okay. So, Got any rolls up there? Mother? Child? Is child a role? Sure, okay. Child is a role. More? Host parents? One more? I'm sorry. Playgroup member might be a role. Child in a playgroup might be a role. Employee. Okay. Quit her job. She stopped being an employee. Family, well, maybe. I think maybe somebody already said this, but stay home mom, that's a rule. Like soccer mom. Stay home mom. Okay. Settings?
The four homes.
Daycare? Her job, probably. It's ambiguous. She might have been a traveling salesperson. Right? But presumably there's a setting that she went to. Or if we assume, then that can be a setting. One of the homes is her stay home, the one where she lives, where the kids live. Okay, so that might be specifically differentiated from the others. Activities? Muller activities?
Planning.
Ooh, okay. Okay, somebody was engaged in providing child care. Okay. That would be an implicit role here too. It's not specifically stated, but probably somebody was running that child care program. Okay. So, if planning, supervising.
Would it be more activity than mother being
a stay-at-home mom? Is staying at home a molar activity? That's why she started the playgroups, because she got bored out of her skull, right? Okay, after a couple of months. Okay, we can make some assumptions about that, but certainly she was most likely engaged in molar activities. We hope she was with the children. We'll assume that she was. Okay, how did the kids' mesosystem change? Okay, the daycare setting disappeared from their mesosystem. They no longer participated in it. Then the other three homes were added so that they participated there one morning a week. Say it again, louder. Okay, so these four homes, including theirs, are linked by the children who go from home to home. So those homes, which are now part of their mesosystem, have, because they're part of the mesosystem now, have those direct links of those children who are most likely
trans
contextual dyads. I know, that came out of left field. There wasn't any reason for you to respond appropriately to that other than, wah. Okay. Mesosystems can change in two ways. One is by having settings added or dropped. And the other is by changing the relationships among settings. Remember that the mesosystem is the relationship among the settings that you participate in. So for the children, they lost one setting and gained or changed. They may have already entered these settings at other times. We don't know that. But certainly the regularity, the weekly, is a change in the relationships among those different settings. The predictability of that. And probably a whole bunch of communication among the four parents, or four sets of parents, about the planning and supervising and the transportation and all of those sorts of things. Especially if there was any dissatisfaction among the parents about what was going on in one particular home, right? The others all got on the phone, and not for the children, but if the parents had different styles, different beliefs, different ways of relating to children, then there might have been communication among those settings, which are settings in the children's mesosystem. There might have been conflict, or there might have been congruence of expectations and familiar patterns. Okay? All of that makes sense? Okay. What we would do is ask you very specific questions. Name three roles, identify four dyads, list three settings. How did the mother's mesosystem change? Those sorts of things. Or describe two ways or three ways in which the children's mesosystems change. That's not scary, is it? Yeah. Good. Okay, that's the sort of thing we'll do. If I want you to do more with it, I might do something like give you a couple of hypotheses, and I give them. I mean, I would state them entirely and say, okay, which one of these applies best or most directly to this particular vignette. So then you'd go through the hypotheses, which are all familiar by now, and you'd say, oh, well, that one clearly illustrates hypothesis 37, and then I might ask a couple of questions about that. Yeah. It'll all be pretty straightforward. Want to do another one? This is from the Garbarino book. Yes? I'm sorry? Well, there are different parts, and they're quite different formats. So total questions, 1, 2, 10, 20, 30, 35 or 40, but they're very different formats. 4 or 5, and I'll make that 55 or 60. I left out one of the sections. 55 or 60 sort of items, but there are 4 or 5 different formats, different ways of approaching it. For things like this, probably only one of these with 7 or 8 or 10 questions connected to it. And the questions will be pretty short answer. A sentence or two at the most. Okay? Here's an example. Carlton is 18 months old. He lives with his father and mother, both of whom feel he was a mistake. Poor Carlton. Remind me to use a happy one next year. Now, I took this from Garbarino's book. So. Both parents feel tied down and they can't afford to go out on weekends. This is all designed to keep you from having children right away. Carlton's father works long hours at a gas station. That's a good reason to stay in school, so you don't have to do that. And wants nothing more when he comes home than to eat dinner and watch television. Don't marry a guy like this. He ignores Carlton except to yell at him. Carlton's mother feels trapped and depressed. She has no friends and sees little prospect of making any in the building where they live. She blames Carlton and his father. She belittles Carlton when he causes trouble and ignores him the rest of the time. Anybody want Carlton? And take him home? Yeah. Poor little toddler. Okay. He's probably cute as a button too. Yeah. On top of that. Remind me to get a picture of Carlton. Okay. So we have a developing person. Yes, the parents are potentially developing persons too. Although in this case, they're not. Not very well developed. Dyads? Could you name the people in three dyads?
Yeah.
Who you got?
Carlton, mother. Carlton, father.
Okay. Carlton, mom. Carlton, dad. Mom and dad. That's it. What else do you see in there? Affect? What? Okay. Where's the affect in the parental relationship? You don't want to live in this household, right? And you don't want Carlton to live in it. The parents, you know, okay, we don't have to be empathetic and sympathetic to them. Or compassionate.
Well, whether or not Carlton's developing his house or not a developing
house. Okay.
His setting is not, doesn't seem like he's engaging in any more activity because he's more vulnerable to his parents and they're stuck in routine. And she feels a little prospect in making friends.
Okay. So, if you look particularly at Carlton, this does not appear to be a setting, a microsystem that is encouraging his development. Yeah. Mom is trapped. Her interactions with Carlton involve belittling, negative affect, ignores him the rest of the time. Dad wants to eat dinner and watch television, so what joint activities is he doing? Watching television with each other without talking is not a joint activity that's likely to get more complex. Rich mesosystem? Nope. Okay, so the microsystem is depressing. They're not connected. The only setting is dad's work. And there are no connections among the other apartments, apparently, or negative affect in those. No friends. No transcontextual dyads mentioned here. Nobody's going any place with anybody else. Huh. So if I gave you another one that was a very different setting, you could do the comparison of the two to look at which features were more likely to promote development in one than in the other. Right? You could do that. If I asked you, what would you want to do to this one to make it more developmentally facilitating, what would you come up with?
Maybe like a play
Okay, so you'd create another setting, play group, perhaps in another apartment. If it's a big enough building, maybe it has a community room that could be used for that, to encourage people to have dyadic interaction with each other. And you would put two UVM student volunteers in that group to model appropriate behavior and to mitigate any conflicts that might arise between the parents, right? New roles. I just made that. No, do that. Yes?
Maybe the parents should go through some type of parent therapy so that they don't think their son's a mistake anymore.
Okay, we want parent therapy, parenting education. How about a fun group where they could talk about being parents and be subtly exposed to other ways of doing it?
Yeah.
How about getting dad more education and a better job? Yeah. How about throwing the television away? Yeah. How about child care for Carlton? In a really nice, enriching, developmentally focused childcare setting. Campus Children's Center. Okay. Full tuition scholarship with transportation. Oh, extended family connections. Mm-hmm. Right. Get them to go visit Grandma and Grandpa. Okay. Could you speculate on what Dad's developmental trajectory has been? Just make it up. Speculation. How did he do in school? I mean, I don't want to belittle people who work in gas stations. Some of you do. Some of you have. Some of you will. Some of the smartest PhDs in English that you'll ever meet pump gas. So I don't want to belittle that. But if he's also grumpy and doesn't do anything more interesting with a child than yell at it and ignore it, he's probably not the brightest PhD in English around. So he's a frustrated young man. Huh. How much planning did they do?
None.
Okay. In the next unit, we'll talk about relationships and what happens when you get pregnant. And how to make sure that you have a good relationship before you take on the responsibility of being parents.
Do you know how old Calvin's
going to be? Oh, how old do you want him to be? Hmm? 14? Now, at 14 in our culture, they would be living with parents, most likely. So the grandparents would be around. Ah, maybe we can move them back in with the grandparents. Okay. So what you're beginning to do is think about various factors that might be important in looking at the microsystem and what kinds of roles the people have available to them. And if you continued, you could play with this. You could speculate about, well, what if they're what if they're both 45, mom and dad? What if dad's 60 and mom is 40? Happens. happens. Then the microsystem is going to be different, right? Their roles are going to be different. Their mesosystems are likely to be different. And the way they run the microsystem is likely to be different. The way they carry out their activities. Okay. That's what we're going to do in the second unit. We're going to take situations like that, look at the particular effects this one might have on Carlton. We might look at the next transition. So having made a mistake once and having Carlton and he's 18 months old and they're unhappy, so now they're going to have Brittany, right? So they're going to have another kid. What's that going to do to the microsystem? What's that going to do to the relationships? What's going to happen to Carlton when Brittany shows up, when he's 18 plus 9 is 27 months old? How's that microsystem going to change? What would happen to that microsystem if the parents separated? What would happen to the kids? How would that affect their development? What would be the opportunities and risks that would occur in those settings, in those situations? Okay? Now, other questions, things that you need specifically to have me go over. There will be review sessions. I don't have confirmation of the times or rooms yet. I will email you all for the review sessions, one tomorrow and one on Friday, and I'll let you know where they are. They're likely to be about 3 o'clock tomorrow and about 1 o'clock or 1:30 on Friday. Right.
What would, for those kids, their mesosystem be?
Okay. The question is an important one about how we use the term mesosystem. And Bronfenbrenner defines it specifically as the relationships among the settings in which you actually participate. Okay. Now, you're hearing me paraphrase, and that's because, and you will get to the point of paraphrasing too. You just have to remember to keep your paraphrases accurate. Okay. But ideally what will happen as you incorporate this framework is that you will be able to put it in your own words. You'll be able to paraphrase all of it and get most of it right. So what Bronfenbrenner is describing as the mesosystem is the relationships, how the settings are related to each other. That presumes the existence of the settings.
So it's
always from the subject's point of view, and we could get into the philosophical discussion of whether there is any objectivity or not. Bronfenbrenner specifically addresses that in his book, and his point is that there is no objective reality in talking about a person's ecosystem if you're interested in the person's ecosystem, then you want to know what the person is experiencing. So it's a phenomenological approach that says the phenomena are as experienced by the person. I might objectively look at somebody else's ecosystem. We do that constantly, and I might argue that I'm viewing it relatively objectively. But Bronfenbrenner reminds us constantly that I can't actually know what the other person is experiencing. There's always that gap in my objective understanding because it's the microsystem as experienced by the developing person. I might be more objective about the relationships among the settings. the mesosystem. But I can't really ever be truly objective about another person's experience. I can try to understand what it is, but that's my subjectivity trying to take into consideration the developing person's subjective view. When we're talking about the mesosystem, there's several things that are important. One is that we're talking about the relationships among the settings, which means we have to identify the settings, and they have to be ones that the child or the person participates in. That makes them eligible to be related to other settings. But we have to be talking about the relationships among those settings. And I said that a mesosystem can change in two ways, adding or subtracting settings creates or destroys the potential for relationship. And then the second way is by changing the way settings relate to each other, taking out an indirect link, adding a direct link, an indirect link. Adding communication, ending communication, creating negative affect between the two, hostility. Coming to a consensus and congruence about what your expectations for the child's roles are in those different settings. So there are many, many ways to talk about the relationships among the settings in a mesosystem. And you should think broadly about how they change in any particular example that you have. Okay. Other questions? Yep. That's an easy one. Question was, is assignment 4 still due on March 8th? And it is. You want to talk about assignment 4? Okay. Now, first thing to point out is that it's due a week from today. Second thing to point out is that while each of the other three exercises was worth a possible 5 points, this one is worth a possible 25 points. Okay. This is a biggie. Okay. And it's designed so that if you actually do it between now and Monday, at least draft it and wrestle with it between now and Monday, doing that will help you prepare for the ECO exam. So doing it before Monday is good. Doing it after Monday is not quite as good, but is necessary. I'm finishing it after. Turning it in on Wednesday is necessary. That's the point. Okay? So, pick an event or series of related events in your life. Wide open. Wide open. Describe that event or series of events. Then tell us what influence the experiences described had on your life or development and or development. What do you think they meant in your development? Did they give you a big boost, slow you down, divert you, become the most important thing in your entire life, ruin your life, whatever you want. I mean, whatever happened. And then translate your description into Bronfenbrennerian terms, as we just did with Carlton. Can you find in your description, after you've written an English description, plain English, just write it, then go back and see if you can find examples of an ecological transition in your description. Can you find an example of a molar activity? And then in your description, point those out. And do we have a preferred way they do it, or is either way?
In terms of?
You can either write your description.
As long as it's clear.
Julie says, as long as it's clear. Okay. Typically, the question that we get is, there are two ways to try to do this, and we don't have a preference, do we? I should have asked you this earlier in the day, right? Think on our feet, right?
In terms of the
The options are, write it, then go back and revise it so that after you have described something that you now identify as an ecological transition, you write, this is an ecological transition because it represents a change in my role from A to B. Okay. The other way to do it is just write it, then make a list and say, ecological transition. This would be illustrated by, and then you take from your description the change in my role from this to this. Okay. Yeah.
Either way,
as long as you're clear and get all the parts in and explain them clearly enough so that Julie is really clear that you understand that this was a change in role or a change in relation or a change in a dyad. No. Well, change in setting. An ecological transition in this framework is either a change in role or a change in setting, or both. So, yeah, moving from one place to another. Okay. I sense that you're packing up to go. Yeah. Boy, how's that for being specific? Any three hypotheses. Did I write that? Yeah, any three hypotheses. See? Yes, tell us which ones they are. Yes. Yes, identify the hypothesis and explain it. Explain how your illustration illustrates it. Okay, exercise 3 is about to appear on the table down here. Magic.
Appears out of nowhere. And a couple questions. Mm-hmm.